Welcome to The Connection, where humans and aliens converse and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us.
Thoughts from the standpoint of a city dweller who's not all that versed in basic survival in the wilderness with very little is a perfect foil to Keith's instructions from an Army survivalist training instructor.
Hi, my name is Tara, and I do live in a big city, which is LA County. And when it comes to a plan for us who live in the city, who don't even have gardens, who don't have, you know, survival skills or anything of that nature, that when things do start to happen, the most important thing to do is to first off get out of the city and to move inland, take what you have. Basically in California we do have kits of first aid kits, and due to our earthquakes we at least have basically not much, but we do have the basic food supply that would sustain us for at least 3 days, hopefully. And the first aid kit, and we'd be able to take what we can, and you know, do what we can with what we have. And we don't have the animals or the plants or anything of that nature, but what we do have we should use instead of sitting and not even trying. Because if we stay within the cities and don't do anything at all, or pack up and try to move inland and get out of the city, we might as well, you know, we have to try to do something with what we have. So what we're going to do is basically pack up what we have. It's not much, and I know a lot of people, when stuff starts happening, they're not going to understand what to do except to, you know, move inland, obviously, get as high up as we can and build a shallow trench and just ride it out to the best of our ability. We have to try and do something instead of just doing nothing, sitting here knowing, oh, why should I even try to move or get out? I only got 3 days worth of food, a first aid kit, and a blanket. And I know a lot of people might not have a lot when things do start happening. So what I suggest, and what my biggest worry was, just the ability to get out of the city and to get inland and to get to high enough ground and do what you can. Build, if all you can do is build some shallow trench and have a little bit of food, and, you know, just do it. Just try the best you can and work with what you have. Don't just sit in your house and not do nothing because you don't have all these survival things and a lot of food and a whole bunch of everything stocked up. You know, I haven't been stocked up. A lot of people in my position don't have a lot of money. We don't have money to we live day to day. We hardly have enough food. We live in a city. You know, a lot of our money is going to just living in the city. So a lot of us aren't stocked up. There's a lot of people that aren't going to be stocked up, and that was my biggest fear, is just being able to you know, rally up the family, and they'll be like, we don't have this or this, but we have this. Let's do what we can with what we have. Let's give it a shot. Let's try and survive to the best of our ability with what we have. When we get to the point where it runs out, or we'll get to that. First step is just to get out of the city. And that's the biggest thing, because eventually, you know, once people are aware of what's happening, they're either going to sit in their house, not do nothing, because they feel that they don't have all these things that they're supposed to have. When you got the basic knife, you know, take that with you. That's all you have. And take the food that you have and go inland and do what you can with what you have. Even if it's not much and everything, it's better to try than to not try. Because the cities are going to be, there's a lot of people in the cities. And once things start happening, especially in L.A. where I live, we know what happens when natural disasters happen, or people are you know, freaking out over something, and they're worried, and they're going to start looting and rioting and all the bad things that happen in big inner cities, especially in California, when things like this you know, when something big is happening and people are panicked and they feel the need to steal and to fight and to kill, and it's just total lawlessness. I mean, it could happen at any time, even after an earthquake in California. You know, we've seen it, or people just riot for some reason. I mean, you have to, you have to protect yourself, but the best way to do that is to get away from that and to just move. As soon as you know that something's happening, to pack up everything and just go. Just go and get out of the city and inland, because who knows what's going to happen if you wait a day or two and wonder.
Hi, my name is Keith. I'm going to give my take on survival in the woods or in any environment that may pertain. This is based upon 15 years being in the military, Army Infantry, Airborne Infantry, and as the instructee and the instructor. All too often, one can find himself or herself stranded in an environment where no matter what you plan for, everything goes against you, and you have nothing but those few items that you would carry on you or in your pocket. Usually almost everybody carries a small knife of some sort, whether it's just a small pocket knife or a Leatherman-type tool. Then it's up to your own resourcefulness to pick up with what you have, to provide yourself with shelter, with food, with a means of making fire for heat and possibly tool making, and provide food for yourself. One of the first things in the event that something happens or you find yourself alone is you want to locate reasonable shelter and concealment. The best thing to do is to recon your area. By recon, I mean scout it out. Look for anything that will make a good temporary cover, whether it be a rock shelter, an old abandoned building, possibly the hulk of a vehicle. Just anything where you can get in and get cover, be outside, protect yourself from the elements. Oftentimes in a woodland environment, you can find small caves, which is good, or you can take and make a pole shelter, which is just basically what it is, just a few poles with some material thrown over it, similar to the old Plain Indian teepees. Then once you have shelter, you have to assess what you have and those items that you have with you, whether it's your, you know, pocket knife, your cigarette lighter if you smoke, matches, dental floss. So once you go through your pockets and look what you have, one of the first things, if you don't have a means of making fire, is you have to make a fire. And probably overall the best thing that there is a bow drill. And this is just a green sapling limb. You fasten it up like you would make a bow as a kid maybe. But you can use shoelaces. You can use a piece of material from a shirt. Wrap it up, make your bow. It's nice and flexible. And then you find you a good dry stick, take a knife, sharpen one end to a point, use your blade to drill a small hole into another dry piece of wood, lap about three turns of the string or the cloth around the stick, and then you, in a motion like sawing, go back and forth. And you'll need a second small piece of wood to hold the upper end of your stick. So your notched end's going into the drilled piece of wood with another piece to hold it. So you rotate back and forth quickly, and this takes sometimes upwards 5, 6, 10 minutes, depending on how thin of a shaving you have for kindling, how dry the wood is. But once you get it going and you get smoke and you get that first little flame, and you feed this fire up until you get bed coal. So you have fire, you have shelter. Next thing is the procurement of food, and there again, this depends upon your environment you're in. The bow drill can also double up as a weak power bow. You can knock a bird off a limb with it. You can hit a rabbit or any other small mammal with it hard enough to stun them, knock them down, run over, pick them up, finish the job with your pocket knife or leatherman tool. So there you have, you know, your first meal probably since being stranded. Another thing is if you're in an area where there's a lot of water at, whether it's pools, streams, small lakes, is the fish trap. It's nothing more than just limbs and small limbs, pencil size or smaller, that's interwoven to make a large circle, like a cone. And on either end is an inverted funnel. And you set this in the water, and fish will swim in through the inverted funnel, but they're not smart enough to find their way back out. So every day or so on a regular basis, you pull this up out of the water, you empty out your catch of fish, turtles, the occasional snake, and sort through what you want, dump the rest out, and replace the trap. During which this whole time is you have to be aware of what's going on around you, because in a hostile environment, you'll never know who you'll walk up on or may walk up on you. Collection of water is also a necessary thing, whereas if you have no containers other than like canteen cups or canteens, scrounge about, find containers that are clean, nothing that has had petroleum or chemicals in it. Water bottles are good. You can catch rainwater if it rains. If not, then you have to scout around and try and find a spring. The worst thing to do is to drink stagnant water. Dysentery is a bad thing. I've had it once, and that's something I never want to live through again. There's the easy remedy for it, which is what the doctors and the meds call the BRAT diet. BRAT being B-R-A-T, bread, rice, apples, applesauce. You know, those things will lock your colon up for you so you don't lose all the fluid. If you must drink water that's from an unknown source, always look for water that's running, and if possible, follow it back to the source, whether it's a spring coming out of a rock or, you know, melted ice coming off of the hill. You follow this, find the stream, follow it back to the source, because there at the source, the water should be safe enough to drink. And if you're unlucky enough to where you find yourself with no streams, no running water, then the next thing is to find a clean metal container where you can boil your water. You have your fire going, you have your shelter, you have your food procurement. So take a clean metal container, put it over your coals, put your water in it, get it boiling. Water needs to be considered safe enough to drink. The water needs to boil approximately 45 minutes just to kill any parasites, any microbes in the water. It may not smell good, it may not taste good, but it's safe drinking water at this point.
So Tara, what were the biggest worries, like if you were imagining yourself and your daughter?
I have three also.
But you have young children.
Yes.
So you're a family. But, you know, you're imagining yourself, like, on a short-term basis, like, oh, my God, this is really happening. And the family is, you got your knife and you got some food stock and a few things, and maybe you're in a car, but maybe the car breaks down or you have to go on foot because roads are jammed.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of thing is your worst worry of what you might encounter on the road? And what have you thought you might do about that? You know, like, what is your action plan?
Definitely, you know, if the car broke down or, you know, we're trying to get out or it's not moving and there's people around, the biggest concern is just people in certain situations. I mean, we have a lot of gang activity in L.A., you know, we hear this and that. Well, it's true. The biggest thing for me with my family on foot is making sure that we aren't getting, you know, mugged or hurt for certain things. So even if we don't have a lot, maybe somebody's not going to rob us because we don't have a lot. And that's kind of, you know, a good thing. You know, everyone wants to have this and that. Well, if you have too much, especially here in this area, that's my biggest concern, just going on foot, is making sure that nobody, it would be for our safety, just not having people trying to hurt or loot us. And if we don't have a lot and we're on foot and we're able to protect ourselves, which I've been able to, I mean, here, even daily, you have to be able to protect yourself. And that's a lot, they don't show that a lot, how people are, especially here or probably in other cities, big cities, there's a lot more activity and crime that a lot of police don't know or they don't do anything about. I mean, it's always about surviving, you know, even if you only have your fist and you have to fight, if that's what it comes down to, you have to. So that's the biggest concern, is just safety because of people doing horrible things in a bad situation and wanting to hurt and to steal, and you just have to protect yourself and move, walk, however you have to do it, and just keep an eye on your back. And I'm hopeful that things won't turn out that way, but it's mainly safety from other people at that point if things go down that way, because that is going to happen. That's what would happen even today if something were to happen and somebody just wants to steal from you. It can happen. Cops aren't getting called. You know, you have to fight and protect yourself and your family at all costs. And that's what I would do. I'd be prepared to just protect my own and mind my own business and walk and get to where I need to go at least, and not have... You know, it's so protection of ourselves and what little we do have. That is the biggest thing. We have to protect ourselves because of people.
Other things to do to procure food is string snares and, you know, where are you going to get strings at? Shoelaces and bootlaces are often quite long. If you unravel a lace of an old shoe, hiking shoe, or boot, they'll run upward 72 inches long. That's 6 feet. That will make a nice snare where you tie one end to a nice, strong, flexible limb, pull it down, have your noose made on the other end, have it set up between a couple sticks. So when your small animal, rabbit, turkey, deer walks through, it trips the trigger, the limb yanks up, catch the animal. So you have, you know, with that in mind, you have your fish trap, and you have snares, and then you're set for a prolonged environment, water, food, shelter. And the whole time, you're always constantly improving your shelter, your food source, your water source. So, and there's many weapons that can be made just out of stuff that you'll find laying around. If you do find a nice, good green stick, you know, and you make you a small bow, you won't get a very strong one, probably 30-pound pull. And then again, where are you going to string it with? Think about these old laces. You know, they're 72 inches long. They'll be good for a 5-foot bow. It's not going to be the greatest, but it's not going to be as good as what you get from a sporting goods store or even a Walmart store, but it will knock down a small animal. It will, if it doesn't kill it when you shoot it, it will injure it enough where you can catch it, and then you'll have lunch. Great meat plants are edible. All it takes is picking up a Audubon Society book. Audubon Society publishes a great many of them, but there's one or two that I've seen that are specifically geared to plant in a more temperate climate. Things like cattails are great because the roots can be dug up, peeled back, boiled, and eaten like potatoes. The immature heads of the cattails can be eaten as corn on the cob in little miniature ears. The stalks and the leaves are great for weaving into baskets, fish traps, storage containers. Then there's other plants that are out. You get wild berries, in the temperate zones. Again, you'll find wild berries, whether they're strawberries, blueberries, blackberries, dewberries. And another, just a note here on blackberries and dewberries, someone once asked me what the difference is. A blackberry is upright, thorny cane. Dewberry runs across the grain, runs across the ground, rather, on a thornless cane. So that's the difference, primary difference. Then further north, there's other berries, other fruits. A lot of crab apples grow wild. They're tart. You may not like them when you bite into them, but they're a great source of vitamin C, as are rose hips. And a rose hip is that part of the rose bush where the rose blooms, the petal falls off, and the little pod, that's a rose hip. You can eat them raw. They're pretty tough. Or you can boil them to make tea. Another good plant to look for is the dandelion. And this plant, every part of this plant is pretty much edible. The flowers, the leaves, the roots can be eaten. They can be dried and ground and for a coffee substitute, or they can be boiled fresh. Once they're cleaned and peeled, they're again eaten like a potato. Many flowers are edible. Best thing to do is, if you're not sure, is just keep an eye out and watch what the animals in the area will eat. If the animal, such as a squirrel or a rabbit, chews on a plant, then it can be reasonably assumed that the plant is safe to eat by humans. Also, other animals that are there that you might run up on is the snake. The snake may not be a great thing, but if there's nothing else to begin with, you can hit the snake with a stone. We smash his head, skin him, cook him, and then, you know, his protein may not look good, may not taste good, and there's probably the psychological side of it, a snake. But, you know, if it's you or the snake, I'll go, you know, I'd rather it be me survive than me eating a snake. Plains Indians. Some tribes of them will eat dogs. Some cultures in the world, dog is considered to be a great thing. If you find yourself in a situation where the dog is looking really good and that's all there is, well, you eat the dog, but there's parts of predators, and a dog is considered a predator, that you don't eat. For instance, the liver. The liver of all predatory animals contain parasites, which will cause diseases. In any animal, I just feel like it's best not to mess with the liver. Go for the hips, the shoulders, the ribs, any of the muscle mass, but stay away from things like the liver and the brain, because if there's a parasite, that's where it's going to be at. As far as in temperate climates, any type of fish, it's edible. It may not look good. It may be ugly. But hey, it's fish. It's protein. And in the event of any kind of natural calamity, the protein is going to be the main thing that's going to get you through until you can get to either a friendly establishment or you can work up and improve your living situation to where you have more leisure time to do more things.
Now, what would happen, let's say you get out of the city and you're finally up into wherever, the mountains, or maybe you make it all the way to the Sierras in a car, and there you are. Now what is your worries?
The worries would be being able to, you know, dig a shallow trench and have some kind of shelter, obviously, whether it be some plastic tent of some sort, you know, I'm hoping, or whatever I have, some clothes, you know, build some kind of shelter just in the meantime. Biggest concern there would be water and food, you know, see how much we had, to start rationing on what we do have for as long as possible. And it's a big concern because you only have a trench and that's it. And that's scary for a lot of people in the city to be able to go into the mountain. And what do? Then you dig a trench and then you're sitting there and you don't have a lot and you're wondering how else to better protect yourself or, you know, from what the elements are going to bring. So that would be the next step. If all I could do was build a shallow trench just to ride, you know, get in it and try to survive and ride it out and survive as long as I could, that would be it. My concern would be starving and not being able to, you know, starving probably at that point if I got somewhere safe enough to do it. But, you know, who knows? I mean, you survive with as much as you have. And wherever you're at, if there's animals or you can try to hunt, basically set traps if you have no weapons. You know, try to do something to bring in some kind of food source or look for a water source or if there is none. I mean, that would be the biggest concern is not finding a way to survive.
Yeah, now Tara, as somebody who's not done those kind of survivalist trainings where they drop you into the woods with a candy bar and you know, a toenail clipper, whatever the heck, you know, where they're supposed to teach you how to be resourceful and what you can do and gain confidence or learn. As someone who hasn't gone through that, what would you imagine you would do in the instance of having to trap animals or find vitamin C? Vitamin C is something that humans cannot produce, and therefore we get terrible illnesses like scurvy and actually die from the lack of vitamin C if we don't get it. So you don't have your vitamin C bottle or you don't have your orange juice. Would you know what to do for vitamin C? And what if you had to build a shelter and you didn't have a tent? And how would you go about building an animal trap? Are you prepared for that in your current circumstances?
Well, you know, and it's something that goes to, you know, living in the cities, there's a lot of rats. We're always trapping the rats, which is, in essence, I guess, the best way that I learned how to at least make some kind of trap with as little as possible because it does work, and it requires string and just some kind of box and the ability just to put the string at the end so that when they come in, it just kind of, it can noose around them. There's just a way, it's real simple. I mean, anybody can look that. I recommend it. I mean, a lot of people here do it because they can't afford traps. We have traps, too, you know, the regular traps, but we also have to use, you know, string and a box-looking thing. I mean, it's just a plain old box or it's a wood box, and you put the string in there, and once they go in, it just shuts the door behind them, something that can go down. So that's the basic thing. I mean, a lot of people don't know that a lot of inner-city people are doing that to catch rats, but some of them are, and they'll be – it's good. I mean, I'm glad I know how to do it. As for building a tent, yeah, say we don't have a tent. Basically, when you're trying to survive, the mind is going to, like, help you just say, hey, just take some blanket or something, you know, just to – or some trees, depending on if there's trees. I mean, use whatever you can to build some kind of shelter, depending on what my environment is. You know, basically, I'm going to build some kind of shelter, either out of branches and trees or clothes, blankets, you know, my car upholstery at that point. And if I don't have the car, then some kind of, you know, there's whatever is around is what I'm going to have to work with, whatever the situation are. And a lot of people probably would be scared, like, what am I going to do? You know, once that happens, but that's the thing. You have to just kind of go and then see where you're at and just do what you can. And I don't even know what exactly I'm going to do once I reach that point, but at least reach that point and then use what I can find. And I think humans have good, you know, survival instincts that they'll be able to, you know, if I have some plants or something and we're able to eat them, I know certain ones we eat already. You know, like basic grass even here, like you can, you know, eat it. Certain cloves or whatever, you know, whatever is around for the vitamin C. I mean, that is something that I'm worried about. I don't know, you know, which plant has it. So, you know, I'm not going to have the vitamin C. So I'm worried about that. But what can you do? I mean, a lot of people are not going to be prepared.
Yes.
You might not have the vitamin C, but, you know, who knows? Maybe later down the line, wherever you're at, you find, you know, a plant that actually has it or you're actually able to get it a different way, or there's some kind of tree somewhere that has some kind of fruit, if you're lucky. And it is. It would be about luck in some ways. Okay, you're taking a chance of dying if you go anyways, because you might not have all the things you need and the food and you know, but you're going to die if you just stay. You're going to die if you just sit in your house and not try to leave and work with what you got. I've been mentally prepared for years and knowing of what's going to happen. Just try to survive with what you have.
Now, I said pick up a rock, bat a snake in the head. Rocks are great tools. Actually, the first known murder in history was when Cain slew Abel with the jawbone of a donkey. The second recorded murder I know of in history was where David slew Goliath using a sling. That type of sling is really easy to construct. It's just a cloth pocket, two long strings, or two long narrow strips of cloth. It takes a little practice. You get to pick your rocks. But a stone like that, a small stone weighing in the probably 3 to 5 ounce range, will kill a rabbit, will kill a deer, will kill a large dog, will definitely give another individual a throbbing headache. This is just from material that you've got here. Then again, there's always, as you're scouting around, ever constantly moving out in a greater circle, looking for items, you know, you to improve your shelter, to provide more food and more water for you. Always be on the lookout for anything, you know. So we've covered, and most stones and minerals can be worked quite well. For hundreds of years, our Plains Indians made arrowheads and spearheads from rock. The main thing is the type of rock that it is and how it's treated. The Indians would heat them over in their fire or over their fire to make them more malleable. So you can take, if you find a nice big hunk of jasper or agate or flint, and flint is a good rock for many purposes. You can strike it with steel and make fire. But you can heat these in your fire and then shape them down with another rock that's not been heated to make points for arrow shafts or points for spear shafts. Also, if you have your knife blade, you can fasten your knife blade to a long pole, spear a fish in a string, use it for a weapon against other humans, hostiles. The whole ideal is when you're, you know, like I say, the ideal is to evaluate what you have, because I can plan for calamity or a disaster, but it's not going to happen when I plan for it. It's going to be when I'm least prepared for it. It's what's happened to me in the past, being in the military, being overseas. I got separate from my platoon. I spent 3 days on my own tracking across the desert to get to a friendly fire base. So the best thing to do is to research more. There's a lot of textbooks, or not textbooks, but a lot of books out. Familiarize yourself with the area that you live in. If you're in a more arid environment, say like Arizona or New Mexico, get out on your days off. Look at the cactuses, and a cactus is a great plant for water or moisture. They store up water. You can slit them open. You can scoop out the pulp, eat the pulp. You can drain the moisture out of the pulp, out of the cactus. Not a whole lot, but it'll be enough to get you through or get you a few miles more across the desert area. If you live in a more temperate climate, say like the Appalachian range, you get out, examine the trees. Live nut trees grow wild. Flat walnut, hickory, butternut, black fruit trees grow wild, apple, pears. said, there's a lot of wild native plants that a lot of the older people use. There again, the dandelions, the cactus, they're available, and they grow everywhere. Daylilies are another great plant. And a daylily, if you ride down the back country roads, you see all these reddish yellow flowers growing on the sides of the roads and up on the banks. These are daylilies. The bulbs from them are edible. You just treat them as any other bulb. The only bulb, flower bulb that comes to mind that's not edible right off is the Jack in the Pulpit bulb. If you eat it raw, you're going to regret it. It won't make you sick, but it'll make your mouth dry up just like you got a whole tablespoon of sac ammoniac, right? So what you do, if you find a whole patch of the Jack in the Pulpit plant, you dig them up, and you roast them over a fire, and that kills out the bad stuff in them, and then you can eat them. Persimmons is a wild fruit tree that grows out, and persimmons not good until after frost has hit it. But after the first frost, they're everywhere. You gather them up. They're rich in vitamin C. Mulberry is a wild fruit tree. It looks like a kind of like a blackberry or a raspberry on a big tree. How people in cities are probably familiar with mulberries because birds eat them and then the birds leave deposits on their cars.
What if you had nothing, like you were robbed on the road and
yeah.
your knife and everything was taken from you and you had no, I know you know how to build a trap with a string and a box to catch a rat, but have you ever thought about any other means of
things get real ugly and I have to put my family up on some hill and go down some hill, go back into the city and start looting myself. Just to have the basics, I'll survive that way as well. And that's another thing, because you come down to terms where you have nothing to even work with, it's going to get ugly because that could change some of us into a different kind of survival mode where we actually become a part of... Did you catch another rat?
Lizard.
Oh, he wasn't supposed to go in there. Well, lizard got in the... Hey, you can eat those too, right? He went into the rat trap. Sorry, guys.
Well, it's very apropos here on the interview to have you catching something in your trap. You know,
yeah, and
by
then,
hand.
But you know, the truth. I'm being so honest that if it came down to it, to where we had absolutely nothing, and you know, there's people going mad and stealing and doing that, and I had nothing, I would probably be in the same predicament. Truthfully, I'm being honest. I mean, at that point, if I had absolutely nothing, I would become one of them and survive that way. I mean, who knows? I might. You know, end up getting beat up at that point, or I might be beating people up, you know, that are trying to loot, and I'm trying to get what they have. I mean, I'm going to be surviving. It's going to be like an animal, almost, in a sense, where what there is, and I have nothing, I'm going to fight for that, because I got to feed my kids at least something, or try to get something so that we can survive for a little bit of time, however long that is.
But if you do, if you knew how to catch things in the woods, and where to look, and what to find, and how to catch it, and what you could eat in the woods that you'd don't even suspect, edible plants and the like, vitamin C,
yeah, and where to find it,
you wouldn't be driven to that, right?
In a way, maybe not, but that's the thing. You know, I'm still researching on plants that I can eat that do have those things. You know, I'm still in my preparation mode for the plants and how to, you know, catch other animals. If I knew how to do that, maybe I wouldn't be forced to loot and ride as well just to get something so I can catch a fish in the creek or something. If I had nothing, I would use what I had. But if I had no string or even I could make something like a tent or a net, you know, I mean, I could do it that way too. But if I had like absolutely nothing or even no trees, you know, depending or no water source, you know, and you could eat all the plants you want. But if you don't have certain things, you're not going to be able to survive for very long, even if you know which ones to eat, or, you know, there's still other means that you're going to have to, you know, figure out, unfortunately. So, no, I mean, a lot of people are going to freak out, even if they know what to do to survive, even if they know what plants to eat, even if they, you know, people aren't going to really care at that point. They're going to just want to go steal it or fight somebody else, go hunt another person down to go get it. Because they, even if they do know, that'll help them a little bit. But if not, a lot of people are more driven to obtain more when something like this happens. I mean, that's why we still, you know, even with looting or earthquakes or anything in California, I mean, it's not even a matter of surviving. They just, they want, and they're going to be a part of it. And they don't care if they already have a TV. They might as well just go steal another one. I mean, people don't think like that, and that's what's really sad, is there's a lot of people around me even now who don't even care. They'll just go ahead and go be stealing, unfortunately. And even if I tell them which ones to do or how to do it, they don't care. They'd rather, if there's an easier way to do it, they're going to do it, whether we tell them how to survive or not. So it's going to be real ugly real quick for a lot of, that's why you got to get out of the city, because it's going to get ugly real quick, because that's just the way the people are.
What about injuries? Like, what if the person is run off into the hills because, and they surely have a broken arm or something like that, you know, and they're by themselves, you know, like, well, obviously they're bleeding or they have an infection. Or are you familiar with anything along those lines?
Well, to a certain extent, now if you're bleeding, yeah, you know, a scratch from maybe running through some briars, you know, you can just clean it with good soap and water. You clean it, wrap it over with some material. If it's a deep cut, you definitely want to put pressure bandage on it. And this is, you know, pressure bandage. To make one up real quick, is take some material, fold it over in a square, put it over the affected area, then use like an ACE bandage or something to go over that to put pressure on it. That way it will stop bleeding, it'll clot up. Then you can keep it clean and it'll heal. As far as a broken arm or a broken leg, those are more difficult. You'll have to make a splint. And very few people I've ever known have been able to reset a broken arm or a broken leg by themselves. Once you get the break, you can put a little traction on it to reset it, then you have to splint it, and you're off of it for several days to give it time to start knitting back together.
Yeah, what if, like, laying low, like, let's say what you've described, what it is, somebody who's on their own and they're trying to make their way back, you know, to civilization or a friendly place. But what happens if, during all this starting the fire and making shelter and all that kind of thing, if there's people around that might see them, any advice on how to, like, not make noise and stay low, kind of crouch, or, I mean, anything along those lines that you guys were instructed in?
Yeah, in moving, especially in nighttime, if you move across a hill where you're underneath the crest, so you're not silhouetted by the moonlight or the starlight, so you stay far enough down the hill so you're in the deep shadows. Most people will take the easy route out and go high, you know, they'll walk across ridgetop, and then it's just like having, you know, fingers in front of a flashlight bulb, right, and making a little animals, and all, you'll stand out like that. Always want to stay in the heavier forest if you can. At the bottom of the hill is not a great place to be at, because when it rains, all your water's going to come down, and the very top's not good, because you'll silhouette yourself, or your liable to wet yourself against moonlight, starlight. So you find you somewhere from the bottom third up to the upper two-thirds, or bottom quarter to three-quarters up the slope, if you're on a slope. If you're in the bad situation where you're on flat ground, is an advantage and a disadvantage is you can see far off, that can also be seen from far off. So there, cover would be depressions where you can get into a ditch, stay low. Another way of making a fire is to dig you a small hole with your knife, maybe 9-10 inches deep, about 8-9 inches in diameter. And when you start it up, you get it burning, and you can lay a piece of scrap metal or something over it. You'll get the heat off of it, but you'll get very little smoke, if any. The Plains Indians made fires like these. I forget just what they're called, but they're really great. And I've done it just as practice once. Dug the hole, put the shavings in the bottom, got the tinder burning, put the little twigs and limbs and bark in on top of it, and I just put a piece of metal over it, and it just is very slow burning, almost charring, just embers, and it'll last for several hours, and it gives off no smoke.
I was thinking, like, let's say, I'm trying to imagine a lot of people in the city, you know, and maybe, you know, they realize they just have a little time to run, and they're grabbing a few things. Now they could pack their suitcase full or you know, that kind of thing, but usually when they're, if they're on foot, they're pretty soon going to start discarding a lot of stuff that's heavy to drag, and they're just going to pare down to, you know, something that's comfortable to go on. Now, I've heard it said that you ought to have good foot gear and you know, dry feet, and I would imagine if it's going to be rainy that something like a slicker would be something you wouldn't want to discard. Or and I've heard it also said that, like, a wool shirt, for instance, is better than a cotton shirt, because wool, if it's soaking wet, you're not going to get cold. It'll keep you warm, and, you know, that kind of thing. Is there anything like what you can discard and what you could, should pare down to, like in clothing, what you should value and that type of thing? What should be in? Because people lots of times, they think the wrong thing, you know.
Yeah. Okay, in clothing, yeah. Good shoes are always are essential. Good hiking boots are probably the best bet. With me, I'll go with my leg boots, which is based on the issue, or the jungle boots, where I have these super long boot laces where if I have to, I can use them for other things. Plenty of socks for women, plenty of underwear. Women are more prone to yeast infections from not having enough clean underwear. Where guys, now I'm just found out, if they're in the desert, you got two changes with you, and you'll live off of that for 14 to 30 days in the field, where women can't. Plenty of socks, plenty of underwear, good boots. The wool shirt's good, because if you're wet, even though you're wet and it's wet, it's still going to be warm, where cotton, you'll lose body heat. Plenty of ponchos around and about. A poncho is, you know, you just pull it over you, it's hooded, it will keep you reasonably dry. Poncho can also be used to make a temporary shelter with, string it between two trees, see it off, stake it off to the ground. Some sort of a hat is good to keep the sun out of your eyes, and in the wintertime help you retain heat for your head. But other than that, after that, it's pretty much personal choices. If you're going to run, if you're going to grab stuff to run, that would be it. Nothing more than you can comfortably carry, which with most people is probably going to be in a range of about 40 pounds. And that's not really a lot. And so in that 40 pounds, I would go for my knife or a couple of my knives. I would go for some of my medical supplies, you know, dental floss, alcohol, peroxide, ACE bandages, regular band-aids, maybe, you know, you grab a little bit of Clorox, small bottle of Clorox, because Clorox can be used to many things, treat bug bites, purify water in a pinch. This, you know, and some sort of bottle, you know, like whether it's a 2-liter drink bottle or the 1-liter water bottles, is, even if you drink the water, you can still use the ball as a storage container when you either boil off more water. You can store it to save it for later.
People how to
right.
do these things that easily.
Right.
We
right.
might really have a chance, but
right.
we don't have the ability right now with our establishment and caring for the people. I mean, they'd rather lock us up in L.A. and let us eat each other up and fight like cats and dogs
right.
and just
right.
tear each other up
Right.
I mean, if we had an ability to massively get information out to people and they understood, I don't think we'd have the panic that way. But I'm prepared because right now our establishment is not helping in that sense. Who knows? If they could teach us how to make a something to survive that easily and we all could bond together and know that we could at least make something and instead of hurting each other and stealing from each other. But right now, from my standpoint, you know, if we don't have that, people are just, it's just horrible. I mean, and we have nothing. They're not helping us to even learn anything. A lot of people, we're just working and trying to put food on the table every day. And some of us don't even have 3 days worth of food. I am lower class. I'm considered poor class, you know, and if we don't get this out and find a way to like tell people or try to educate them, this is what's going to happen, you know, with the looting and rioting and the people being this way to each other.
Yep. And thank you so much for your participation. Is there any kind of book that you would recommend? And I know you're talking from your Army experience. I don't know if the general public can get a hold of these manuals at all or any other kind of a book that you think is that you're familiar with, you know, like the name of the book or the author. That may not be the case, but is anything coming to mind?
Yeah, Paladin Press publishes quite a lot of books. And a lot of them, these are actually sold on military installations. But one is like the SAS survival book, and everybody, if you don't know, the SAS is the British Special Forces. Their survival book, or a copy of it, is published by Paladin Press, along with like the Poor Man James Bond book, which gives you a lot of different ideals for protection, you know, to build up, you know, toe poppers. To make other devices for protection. The Audubon Society, their books, as far as plants and birds of say North America, are really good. Those are found at Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. A lot of the military, and the Army just released a new one, it's a limited distribution Boy Scout manual. It's also a good one for string traps and snares and fish traps. Or the old Boy Scout manual from when I was a kid 30 years ago. A lot of this is just, a lot of things is trial and error, and it's best to go out, arm yourself with some information, whether it's off the net, or you go to Books A Million, find you some books, and or the local library and check them out. Go out, plan a weekend with the kids and the family, go out to go fishing or camping, and try building you a string snare or the little fish trap, because then you can figure out then what you've done wrong and why it's not working instead of waiting until the last minute after a disaster and then you're scrambling, trying, scratching your head, trying to figure out what went wrong. You already have the bugs worked out of it. I'll take my kids out now, you know, we'll go out, spend the day out in the woods. We'll build a wire snare, string snare. We'll make the fish trap. I teach them the different types of trees. You know, okay, now if I doubt and you gather up these acorns, I'll show you how to make flour out of the acorns to make bread. Or, you know, we gather up hickory nuts and show them how to crack hickory nuts, which are really tough with rocks or stones. Don't always have a hammer close by. And when I take my kids out camping, I try to teach them the very minimalist approach in camping where, okay, all you got is your pocket knife or your little spool of dental floss. What are you going to do with it? And then it gives them an opportunity to think and to problem solve and to reason. And my 7-year-olds, the twins, have both made bow drills and started fires in under 20 minutes. So it's the bow drill is a really great tool to make. You start your fires, you layer on your wooden shaft, you can put you a stone tip or a metal tip on it, and you drill holes through wood. Do any number of things with it. And it can double up as a very weak bow for shooting small birds and small animals. this thing. There again, you know, you just got day on weekend. You have nothing planned. Get you up a piece of material, a couple long strings, small bucket of rocks, and go out and try knocking a tin can off the fence post with a David-type sling, David and Goliath-type sling. There's so many things that one can do, but the main thing is you want to find shelter of some sort, you want to find a source of water, and you want to have a source of food. You have to create a fire of some means to cook your food, purify your water. And if it's in a colder climate, then the fire is definitely going to be a source of heat as far as cooking your food that you catch or capture with. Those were the four things to practice at doing, and doing them without using your SIPO or your BIC or having a trunk load of tools in your car. And this in Fort Benning is taught, they'll take soldiers out, they'll drop them off. All they have is what's in their pocket, or what they will let them carry in their pocket, which is usually the dental floss and the Leatherman tool. For $70, the Leatherman's a pretty good investment. $10, a good knife will do just as much.
I love the part where you take your kids out and teach them how to do this, and your seven-year-olds can start a fire with a bow. You know, I loved it. Oh, thank you so much for sharing.
Hello, I'm Roger, president of Troubled Times Incorporated. We're a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping mankind survive during troubled times when self-sufficiency may be the only answer. Our organization offers a twin set CD of survival information at cost to the public. The CDs are in hypertext and PDF format, two popular browser formats, and contain all the information collected by the massive Troubled Times website. The CDs allow you to browse this information offline at your leisure. The cost of the twinned pair is $4.10, and this includes postage. You can also get the survival booklet, a hip-sized booklet of the gist of the Troubled Times advice, for just $5, including postage. We offer a popular combo package for $7.50 that includes both the CDs and the booklet, with the lower postage expense reflected in that price. Send for your copies today to start making practical plans for your and your family's survival. Just click on the $4.10 CD link at www.zetatalk.com, and your copy will be on its way.
That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought, those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.